It's time for the Charlotte FC podcast.
Welcome, 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 and bienvenidos. I'm Nick Finelli, host of the Charlotte FC podcast, where we talk about the fascinating people that work for and around the club, Major League Soccer and U.S. Soccer. This episode's conversation is with Kyle Sheldon, CEO and founder of Name and Number. He has built quite a career in sports marketing, having stints at DC United, NASCAR here in Charlotte, the Seattle Sounders, and the Chicago Fire. Kyle has stepped onto the pitch with his own soccer-specific marketing and creative agency called Name and Number, and is enjoying early success with a client list that includes MLS, Leagues Cup, Dortmund, San Diego Wave FC, USL, Quick Goal, Seattle Sounders, and more. I think you'll enjoy learning more about Kyle and what he has started in the soccer football sphere that is about to explode in the States like never before.
Kyle, we usually have our guests introduce themselves with a quick little elevator pitch. So that way we kind of see what's important to you that we know about you. So what would you say if you were introducing yourself to all the fans in the world in a quick little elevator pitch?
I really like the way you phrased that, Nick. What a great start. Thanks for having me, number one. I'm a lifelong lover, player of the sport of soccer. I think it's a good place to start. Have spent most of my career in soccer, primarily Major League Soccer, three different stints at DC United, Seattle Sounders, and Chicago Fire. And my only time outside of the sport was when I worked for NASCAR based out of the Charlotte office. So I was there pre-Charlotte FC, but plugged into the soccer community when I was there and was always hopeful that Charlotte would get a club. So it's been really fun to watch from afar what's been happening on the soccer scene in Charlotte since I was there. And now I own and operate a soccer-specific marketing and creative agency called Name and Number. And I have a second company called Pathway, which is also soccer-specific, but the mission is to help folks break into and build careers in the sport. So have been fortunate to be in soccer for the better part of 20 years from a career standpoint, and have played since I was three. So love the sport and how it brings people together, and excited to have a conversation today.
Awesome. Yeah, one of the things that got me interested in having you on is in our podcast, of course, we talk to players and do interviews and things like that, but most of it's focused on the people that you don't see, the people that are making all this stuff happen. Like, how did this work, you know, besides the marketing, the ticketing and stuff like that? So maybe it was almost 3 years ago, I saw you posting like, these are soccer jobs. And I'm like, oh, somebody's out there trying to help people get into soccer in these same areas that I'm talking about, things that people are doing here in Charlotte. So I was trying to paint a picture of what's involved in actually the soccer franchise. You know, we got 20 some odd 30 players just on the first team, and there's hundreds of people making all of this stuff happen behind the scenes. So we try to get a little bit of everything. You have obviously had a like you said earlier, a career in MLS with DC United, with Seattle, and in Chicago. But then also you've had the opportunity to work on projects such as like Leagues Cup and MLS Store, and now you're working with San Diego Wave. And I'm sure there's countless other things that you've done, like one-off projects or sustained projects. So I'm really excited to have you here and just talk about what it takes to get into this business and what it takes to stay in, and like what people are looking for. Cause I think this will help other people realize, you know what? I didn't think I was into soccer as much, but I like this, but I love soccer. So it's kind of like marrying both. So can you talk a little bit what your role is with Name and Number, is of course the owner and Pathway, what each of those companies really do?
Yeah, happy to. So Name and Number, soccer specific marketing creative agency, as I mentioned, and we're only about a year and a half old. We have built out the team. Now we've got four full-time people, and then we work with freelancers and contractors to create. And so that takes on a lot of different life forms, if you will. We've done a lot in the production space, commercial spot production, video production, graphic design, creative ideation, marketing campaigns, etc. So And then I'll just mention, you know, Pathway, as in the idea is to help ambitious professionals break into and build careers in soccer. At the moment, it's two newsletters that we send out every week. So we send a newsletter on Wednesday, which features an interview with what we call a soccer thought leader, and usually tactical, practical advice on how to improve your chances of getting a job in soccer, or if you're already in your career, to progress your career in the sport. And then we send out a newsletter on Fridays, which is just a link to all the jobs we can find in soccer in the US and in North America. So it's sort of a one-stop shop if you're someone who's trying to find your spot working in professional soccer, primarily in the US and North America. Then we put all the jobs in one place and send out an email every Friday. And as we build out Pathway, it will become other things. We've been doing a lot of mentorship programs. We're building, for lack of a better word, sort of courses or coursework that will hopefully help people who want to build and grow their careers in the sport. I'd say traditionally breaking into professional sports is very difficult to do. It's very competitive. Lots of people like the idea of working in sports, and certainly soccer, as it's grown over the last 10, 15, 20 years, has become increasingly competitive. Certainly MLS has grown by leaps and bounds. NWSL has grown by leaps and bounds. USL continues to grow. So there are more opportunities, but it also means that it's more. And so I'll pause there, but I can go a little deeper if you like on some of the ways that we see people finding success in that space.
Yeah. So very interesting how that understanding of those things in soccer and, like you said, putting them both together with Pathway, with the newsletter, hopefully, like you said, it'll grow into something else, and then name and numbers, kind of that marketing end. So on that end, you basically bid or contract out to try to get these marketing jobs. And what does that entail? Like, you could give me an example, maybe, like, how did the Leagues Cup project come to be and what did you do for that?
Yeah, I think, Nick, I'm fortunate. I've been in the industry for a long time, so I have a lot of longstanding and trusted relationships, which is a really great starting point for trying to secure work. It takes a lot of different forms. You know, I think we've been fortunate that a lot of it has been inbound. I'm pretty active on social, both Twitter and LinkedIn primarily. And so, you know, having been in that space for the better part of a decade, is you just end up connecting with people and hopefully helping people. You referenced the jobs that I don't post as often because of Pathway. We would kind of aggregate and kind of put everything into the Pathway space now. But for a long time, I would share links to jobs in and around soccer with a fairly regular basis. And I think that was a value add for a lot of folks sort of in the soccer space who wanted to find their way into the role. Or find their way into kind of into soccer. And so, you know, you cultivate a bit of a community. So, you know, to your specific question, sometimes people reach out and say, we've got this thing we're trying to do or a project that we'd like to execute and would love for you guys to talk to us about doing it. And in some cases, you're responding to RFPs, requests for proposal, where someone says, we've got this project and we're asking 3, 4, 5 agencies to submit a proposal and a bit of an outline for how you'd approach it. And so we've done that, and sometimes you get that work and sometimes you don't. It just depends on what the needs are and what your capabilities are. So it really varies as to how the work comes about. I spend a lot of time on a kind of a weekly and monthly basis, just having conversations with folks, and we're not big hard sellers. You know, we believe that we have a special position kind of in the marketplace, if you will, because of our deep understanding of the soccer fan base, soccer culture in America. We've got a really good starting point there. It's the only thing we work on. We're soccer only. So if you're a basketball team, probably not worth calling us. But if you want to connect to soccer in America and soccer fans and soccer culture, we've been in this space for, you know, our entire careers. That goes for the rest of my team as well, as we've all worked specifically in the sport. So there's sort of a starting point where we can kind of differentiate ourselves pretty quickly, where we say, you know, we're soccer specialists, we're soccer problem solvers. And so that's a really great starting point, because there's only a handful of agencies in the US that only focus on soccer. So that gives us a really good starting point. And I think a lot of work just comes from that kind of that starting point, which is, we're soccer specialists.
Right. And so you mentioned some of the other things, but the Leagues Cup, the reason I bring that up is because that was a kind of a new thing, kind of starting from scratch. And I guess not everybody understands or knows, like, a lot of times big groups like MLS, they don't necessarily have an arm that can handle all the stuff that needs to be done for something like that. And then, you know, they might be there on working with you, but they're not necessarily like, okay, here, we have a whole dedicated staff because they're doing all this other stuff anyway. So is that kind of how many of the bigger projects kind of come about, because they don't necessarily have an on staff people?
Yeah, that one was a little bit unique in that, in that case, that was early days of Name and Number, but I was hired by the CMO, the former CMO of MLS, David Bruce, who I'd known for 15 years. And, you know, to your point, it was year one of Leagues Cup and they were still building out the staff. And so they were just in need of some additional kind of marketing, brand, content, thought leadership and strategy. And so in that case, it was a longstanding relationship. And to your point, one of the things we joke, I feel like I've joked about my entire career, is everybody needs help. Everybody needs help. Everybody feels like they're under-resourced, understaffed, don't have the budget that they want. And so the scale of the need obviously varies. Yeah, even a big organization like MLS has the need for external help. And I think it's twofold, Nick. One is sometimes it's helpful to have external help from a creative standpoint, where you want someone who isn't necessarily close to every single detail. And they just bring a different perspective just by virtue of not being in close proximity to kind of the day to day. And then two is it's just a resource challenge, which is, you know, there's a lot of moving parts at a place like MLS, a lot of competitions, a lot of teams. You know, the teams have gone from, when I started in the league in 2005, they were going from 10 to 12 teams. It's 20 years ago, but now they're at 29 going to 30. So there's always sort of need for external support and help. And an organization like MLS probably works with more than a dozen agencies, I would guess, across the business, maybe more, not exclusively in marketing and creative, but you've got different departments who are tapping different agencies and external resources and kind of as needed for different projects over the course of a year.
So for something like that, as an example, or you could use another example, what are you tasked to do? And what are the things you and your group actually does that's like a product or things that basically you turn into the customer saying, this is what we did for you?
Yeah. It's funny the way you ask that, because we've been thinking a lot about, there's sort of two projects we've been tasked with a lot over the last year and a half. One is what I would call kind of strategic marketing consultation, right? Like, what's sort of our plan to go to market to reach American soccer fans? And then the other is just production, videos production, commercial spot production. And in some ways, the production assignments are easier because there's an end product at the, you know, you start with the assignment. Here's the thing we're going to do. Here's what we're going to produce. And then we hand it over and we say, here it is. Marketing strategy and consultation is a little bit squishier. It's difficult sometimes to nail down. It's more planning. It's more thought. It's often, comes in the form of a document or some sort of deck or PowerPoint presentation of sorts that is sort of, hey, here's how we see the world and here are the things we think you can do. But it's a little bit harder to say the end result. I'll just use one example. You know, we worked with Major League Soccer last year in the consumer products department to produce a commercial spot for them. And that was a very clear assignment of we need to produce a 30-second mid-season spot. It's kind of a refresh from their preseason spot. And we want it to highlight jerseys and fan wear. In our case, we came back to them with a series of concepts and ideas for how they might be able or how we might be able to approach producing that commercial spot, and ultimately ended up deciding we wanted to feature real fans and real supporters in different markets. So we actually went to and or hired folks in Cincinnati, Miami, Austin, LA, and there might be one other in Chicago, and identified supporters and fans, people connected to their clubs locally, and went and shot with them on location, kind of in their markets. And then ultimately produced a 30-second commercial spot. And if you watched MLS games last year, I promise you saw it because it ran with some see. And it was a lot of fun. We got to know fans and supporters in different markets. We got to show just a little glimpse of their match day. We went in venue with most of them. So we're in stadium to capture those moments of euphoria, which are one of the best things I love about the sport. And so, yeah, to your point, at the end of that project, we hand over a 30-second commercial spot, and then we typically do some social media cut downs, you know, anything from a 5 to 10 to 15 second kind of cut down that might be for Instagram or Twitter, et cetera. And then this year our relationship with MLS has continued, and we're doing a commercial spot and also have added on 4 photo shoots for apparel and fan wear. And so we've got a year long engagement with MLS in 2024.
That's nice. So how does, you know, you said relationships are probably your biggest asset and being in there. That for you is kind of the almost like the lead or the head of that those kind of deals. The other people that work for you, they're kind of more on the details end, like, hey, MLS wants us to do this. now you have a producer or kind of a creative director that kind of works with that. Is that typically how you're structured?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. We're because we're smaller, I'm still very connected to the work and to the, and kind of to the day to day. But Christy Bruner, who's on my team, who's our director of marketing creative services, will appreciate that we asked that question because she is very detail oriented. She's the person that keeps kind of the train on the tracks. I call her the engine of our agency. And so she's got a skill set that complements mine in a way that's really important. So she's often the lead for kind of our client management, and then for production, she'll be the person that's really organizing the details of a shoot in a particular market and figuring out where we're going to shoot and who's going to be in the spot, working with the club if we're working with a club. And then we have a head of production, a guy named Justin Hubler, who's an incredible talent, but he's a kind of video producer specialist. He shoots, he edits, he can animate and do motion graphics. Anything you see from our channels that is a little bit creative is most likely from Justin. And then we have Todd Albright, who's our head of experience and events. So as we have assignments that are more experiential, that could be a viewing party, or last summer we did a taco truck in San Diego for Borussia Dortmund, who was at the start of their US tour. He'll take a really big role in the experiential piece of things. But the reality is, because we're still pretty small, Nick, is that we all kind of touch everything and it's very collaborative. And as we need to, then, as I mentioned, we hire freelancers and contractors to come in on projects. That could be a producer, that could be an additional videographer or a photographer, it could be a graphic designer. Just kind of depends on the need of the client.
Or if it's like an activation, just hands-on people to direct people where to go.
Exactly right.
What to do.
Exactly right. Yep. That's and great. It really varies. We counted it up. I can't remember last year. I think we used 25 or 30 people from outside the agency who helped on projects at different points. So it's one of the things I also really love about it is we get to tap into the kind of creative community within soccer in the US. And there's so much talent out there that we have the good fortune to work with and collaborate.
And you said most of, or if all of your people are soccer, almost like soccer first. Do you feel like they got into soccer and then learned kind of that marketing side? Or was it they came in from marketing? But then they did a little bit of soccer and you're like, hey, you're pretty good at this. Can you join us?
Yeah, it varies. And we're actually in the process right now of hiring two additional people to join the team. And it really does vary. I mean, one of my favorite questions to ask people is their soccer origin story, because as you know, in the US and in America, the stories vary pretty wildly as to when they discovered the sport and what their connection was to the sport. In our case, at least so far, everyone has worked in the sport specifically, but how they came to it very differently. Christy and I were both kind of lifelong players who loved the sport from an early age. Todd and Justin came into the sport a little bit later in life and in their careers, but have kind of fallen in love with it as they've worked in it and have kind of discovered it that way. So it really does vary. But yeah, even outside our core team, you know, the freelancers, the contractors we're tapping, most of them, if not all of them, have worked in the sport at some point. But yeah, everybody's story is a little bit different.
I'm sure every day is a different day for you and for all of them.
It's you know, it's one of the things that's really enjoyable about the agency life. I hadn't, my only experience working for an agency was when I was 22 years old. I had an internship with a small consumer marketing agency called Fast Horse Inc. in the Twin Cities, Minnesota, which is still there and they're still crushing it. They're an awesome little firm. But you know, my entire career essentially has been working on singular properties. NASCAR was a little bit different because you worked with, you know, you sort of as the league or the sanctioning body, you worked with all the drivers at some point. But the variety from For Name and Number is really interesting. You know, you're working one day on a project for a German club playing in Champions League, and the next day you're working on a project for an NWSL team. And in this case, for us, it was their in-stadium graphics. And that variety is really fun. It can be challenging, of course, but I think it's one of the things that we all really enjoy about the kind of the agency world is you get to stretch different parts of your brain at different times, which is really fun.
So what made you start both of these? Because obviously you had a good, successful career. It seemed like you went to places you wanted to go. All those places had definitely, you know, have benefits and things about their soccer community that you could take from.
I blame my bit. They kind of imbued in me a little bit of the entrepreneurial spirit. I have three siblings. We're all homeschooled, and we were really encouraged. We were young to follow and chase the things we were interested in. Of course, there was the core, you know, studies and core coursework, but there was a real encouragement to pursue the things that interested you and that you wanted to learn more about. So I think that was embedded to me kind of from an early age, Nick. And then you know, as I went through my career and was really close to soccer the whole way through, again, you know this, and most of your listeners will know this, but the trajectory of the sport has just been incredible over the last 5-10 years. And Charlotte's a perfect example of that growth. You know, I was in Charlotte 2013, 14, 15, and there was a soccer community and culture there, but it didn't feel as expansive and significant as has clearly now developed around Charlotte FC. And as I looked at the landscape of soccer in this country and what was coming, and obviously everyone's focused on 2026 and the World Cup. You think about Copa America, FIFA Club World Cup, Gold Cup, hopefully the Women's World Cup in 2027, the Olympics is, and then just the growth of the sport in totality. Combined with the fact that there really aren't that many agencies that, again, are soccer specific or soccer specialists, it just felt like there was some room for someone else to come in and try to carve out a little space. And, you know, the one thing that's wonderful about soccer, obviously, is it's global. And so it's not just about the domestic teams and leagues. It's about the global nature of the sport. And my belief is that every major brand or sponsor, every federation, every club around the world, every broadcaster is going to, at some point between now and, you know, June of 2026, say, what's our American soccer strategy? What are we doing in the U.S. leading up to the World Cup? And obviously extending that to North America with Mexico and Canada as well. But U.S., I think, will certainly be the focus. And so we believe we're putting ourselves in a position that we can help folks connect to American soccer fans and culture the right way. And again, you know this and your listeners know this, but it's a weird little place. American soccer fans and culture is a weird little place. And going back to my comments about soccer origin stories, it's not unusual to have folks that will live in Charlotte who are massive Charlotte FC fans and go to every match and are there kind of day or night. But you also have folks in the market who just love Manchester United and don't really care about MLS or care about Charlotte FC. And you've got fans in Charlotte who just love the U.S. Women's National Team. And so there's all this nuance and there are all these layers that exist. And if you don't sort of understand that as a starting point, how that works and operates, I think whether you're a club, a brand, a federation or sponsor, you can really step in it. You can really sort of say the wrong thing, not put yourself in a position of strength, but instead communicate that you don't really understand the sport and the culture. So again, I think that's where we see the opportunity is to help usher kind of brands and clubs in the right way to connect in the right way.
So were you scared at all to start this out, or just it just seemed like such the natural fit that you're like, I just got to try it?
I like that question. I don't feel like I've been asked that. I think there's always a little bit of fear in starting something new. I think I'm fortunate that I'm someone who likes change. I'm someone who likes a little bit of uncertainty. I like problem solving. I always felt that if something didn't go well, or if the business didn't kind of, you know, if business wasn't coming in right away, that it always, to me, it just feels like a problem to be solved and that there's a route forward. Certainly there's a version where, you know, you fall completely flat and no one's calling you and no one's answering your emails. Again, I think I was fortunate to have a long career in the sport first. I don't think I could have started this at 24 or 25. I think everything I learned through 20 years of being in the sport and building relationships and, you know, the sort of ability to do it well, I think, comes from all of that experience. So, you know, there's a little bit of fear and trepidation when you launch something that big, but I put 6 months of thought and time and energy into the brand and the name. I have way too many Word documents of ideas for the agency name, which was a really fun process, and sort of having conversations in advance of launch to just see what the appetite was. So I don't feel like I went in completely blind. I felt like I had a sense that there would be some work out there. And you know, worth mentioning that I got an engagement with my old friends at the Sounders. I hadn't worked for them for a few years, but they had they just came through their brand evolution this past fall, and they brought me on a 2-year contract to support that effort. And so I had kind of a starting point where I knew I could pay the mortgage. I knew I could put food on the kids' plates, and my wife would be comfortable with them. So yeah, I owe them a lot.
It's safer when you have something in hand.
Exactly right. So that sort of long-term contract sort of, I said, I knew that I could at least kind of bridge the gap. And then, you know, if business didn't come in, then I would have probably gone and found a job somewhere else, but have been fortunate that to date, you know, the phone has continued to ring.
And then, because I had a similar pathway in what I do as a career and kind of did the same thing. I had somebody that was kind of like, when I went out on my own, it was like, well, at least I got this to start me out. I got to get other business, but at least I had this. And for me, it ended up being 15 years of doing that. Now, I didn't That's expand awesome. as much as you did. I expanded who I worked with and stuff like that, but I didn't expand as far as people and growing that way. It was all still kind of based on me. How do you do something like that? Because yeah, you know what you're capable of and you know what you can do, but you also, you could probably do everything, but you know, it's not humanly possible to do all the stuff you really want to do. So how do you get people, how did you know how to do this expansion that you needed to do?
I don't know that I did. I think one of the things you hear from entrepreneurs and people who started companies is you just kind of have to keep going. And it really is just a series of solving problems over and over. I certainly was hopeful that there'd be enough business where I could think about bringing people on. I got to a point last summer, which would have been about 6 months into the agency, where I'd taken on enough business that I was pretty well underwater and wasn't sleeping enough and wasn't spending enough time with my wife and two boys. And that's when I called Christy Bruner, who I mentioned earlier, and I said, I could use a little help. And she happened to have a little moment in her career where she had an opening, and I was grateful that she came on. But that was just out of necessity. I mean, it was really just, again, solving a problem. Just, there's too much work to do. I can't do it all. I need some help. And so Christy came on and had been she just has had a significant impact on how we do things. Cause she, as I mentioned, she's a great compliment to me. I think it's the hardest part, Nick, just to speak more broadly, I think it's the hardest part so far for me. It's actually been figuring out the right way to scale both with people and resources and kind of resource allocation. Because a lot of the reality, I think, when you're starting an agency as we have is it just is naturally it's going to be mostly project-based. You're very unlikely to secure a full year-long or two-year-long agreement or contract with a client. And so you're sort of constantly trying to figure out the right balance of how do we bring in the right resources? At what point do we hire someone to come on full time? Is that a W-2 employee and we're paying taxes and figuring out healthcare?
1099.
Exactly. Right. As a contractor and you're just paying them a stipend. And so we're honestly still trying to figure that out. We're fortunate now to have three people that are pretty well full time. And then, as I mentioned, we're hiring two more folks at the moment who will be contractors, but will be on probably a 9 to 12 month contract, just as we look at the business we have. And then you just have to kind of see where it goes. So there's not a perfect answer. I think that's one of the biggest challenges of starting your own thing is kind of figuring out the right way to scale appropriately, but not take bigger risks than you should. Because at the end of the day, now you've got people who rely on, you know, are relying on you for their income and for their livelihood. And I don't take that lightly. It's really important to me that we're building a sustainable business that allows for that growth to continue, but doing it at kind of the right rate and not to take unnecessary chances or risk.
Yeah. You talked earlier about your start out with the Sounders and having kind of a rebranding or more of that thought strategic thing. Can you talk a little bit about how Name and Number and basically your folks do something for a place like that so we can understand better what that means? Because everybody notices and can see a product, but they might not understand all the stuff that goes behind the scenes of something like, you know, a strategic marketing plan and other things.
Yeah, I mean, a rebrand or a brand evolution is a very specific and charged thing, I think, in sports. And I've been fortunate to be a part of two really positive ones and one that was really challenging and difficult. I just started the fire when the Chicago Fire's initial rebrand was starting and kind of taking place. And so I was alongside that project, and that one was not well received at all. And the second one, I think, was better received. But I mentioned that just to say so much of a project like that is about the process you go through. And because you have people that care deeply about the brand, the logo, the visual identity, what it represents to a city, to a community, to a culture, right? People rally around that thing, right? It's the crest that is over the heart of the players and over the heart of the fan. So in the case of the Sounders, it was a very intentional, proactive process and project where they wanted to speak to as many fans, supporters, and community members as they could in advance of doing the work. So I helped as an individual come alongside the club and alongside some great folks at the club, both inside and outside, to say, well, what does that process look like? So in their case, and in our case, it was a quantitative survey that went out to soccer fans and non-soccer fans and non-Sounders fans in Seattle. We did a ton of qualitative work to have focus groups and one-on-one conversations just to ask the question, what is it about this club that you love, right? This club is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. So you're fortunate to have people that have been there through multiple generations who have a really clear picture of what it means to them as individuals, but then also to the community. And that in the case of the Sounders, a lot of what we heard was that when the Sounders came into MLS in 2009, they didn't really embrace the past. They didn't really wrap their arms around, you know, past that went back to 1974. And so part of the assignment then kind of through those conversations was, we can find a better way to connect past with present with, and kind of looking and getting into the future. So as you look at the identity system that eventually came out, you'll see that every single mark has some tie to the club's history. And that's something I think we collectively, we're all really proud of. And I think it was one of the reasons that the mark was so well received. So, you know, that process, just to go back to kind of your specific question, was that process was multi-months of dialogue and conversation, and then going through the data and then informing the creative brief for the agency that actually was charged with doing the actual, you know, kind of pen to paper work. Right. And that takes a ton of time. Of course, there are stakeholders. You got to think about ownership for the club, supporters for the club. The league has sort of a voice in looking at the marks and kind of giving you a little nudge there. They're obviously thinking holistically about the entire league. So there's lots of voices and lots of people to manage. You think about Adidas as the only uniform supplier in the league, right? They have a bit of a perspective on what should look like. You're looking at color, and are you evolving rave green? Are you sticking with green blue as the primary? Right. So there's a lot that goes into the entire process. And then you've got to tell the story of the mark as you launch. And so Name and Number came on, and again, alongside some other great creatives, created six videos for the launch. We did one for each of the new marks. That just told the story, and it told the story through the fans' voice, because that's ultimately what drove a lot of the work.
That's cool. Yeah, those kind of things take, and then you said, so it's still continuing. So like, what are you currently doing with them that kind of expands what you started?
Yeah, well, the Sounders engagement is over, but the project was 2 years in the making. So the culmination really was last September when they rolled it out publicly. Okay. We didn't necessarily have a hand in everything, right? We had a kind of a particular alignment, but we're really thrilled to have been a part of it, and certainly see the identity now kind of on the field and on the uniforms and in stands, and look at that project with a lot of pride. It was a really fun one to be a part of.
That's cool. What you talked about, just loving soccer growing up, was there a particular part that caught your eye besides, you know, was in the playing aspect and then also on the creative side? Like, how did you know that you could do something in this business on that creative side? Because a lot of people, you know, you hear of other people in sports, they got into something, like maybe they got an injury and they started noticing, you know, oh wow, these people, these athletic trainers and stuff are doing all this stuff. I kind of like this, and I'm not necessarily going to make it as a player. Or, you know, how did you kind of resolve that inside yourself?
I knew pretty early, Nick, that I wasn't going to be, I had no shot at being a player beyond in college. And folks who know me have heard this line a lot, but it's not untrue, is I was highly mediocre. I was a bench warmer on a D3 college team, St. Olaf College in Minnesota, but I loved it. I think to kind of the first part of your question, my three siblings and I all played from a very early age. My parents weren't really into the sport. They didn't play growing up, but it was the thing they put us all in at a young age. And so, as a family, it became kind of an anchor for connection and discussion. And we all played in college at varying levels. We all played travel and club. So weekends growing up, we're going to different locations. We grew up in West Virginia. So, you know, driving to Pennsylvania and Ohio and Virginia and DC and Michigan and kind of all over the region to play the sport. And so we had these just connection points. It was just creating memories together and playing the sport. And we developed a real appreciation for the sport itself. But I think then as I got later and kind of later in life and realized that I could potentially marry what I thought was a bit of a skill set. And I majored in kind of comms and PR to start. You know, I was 15 when the league started, when MLS started. So sort of coming into college and then post-college, it was, oh, I could actually maybe work in the sport that I love. So I don't know that I knew where the creative thread would necessarily come, but I was fortunate to get a job at DC United the year after they won MLS Cup. It was the height of the Freddie Adu era. I joined them in 2005, his second year. And so I sort of had this experience of seeing it at its height at that time. Obviously, it's come a long way since then. And as I mentioned, I'm very much entry-level communications, PR. I was writing press releases, doing the media guide, working with media. And then as my kind of career went on, I was able to just absorb more areas. Eventually, we're seeing marketing and content and design and video and sponsorship activation, kind of a whole host of areas. And I feel really fortunate that I was able to, I had mentors and managers and leaders who gave me opportunities to kind of expand my oversight and my responsibilities. But that also came with a lot of ambition and asking the question, where else can I help? And I think that part's really important for folks who are earlier in their career. You got to get after it.
You got to be curious. You got to talk to all different people and just kind of get an idea of what everybody does, because you get a better picture.
Yeah, I love the word curious. I think the best people I work with are the ones who are curious and ask questions and sort of aren't deterred by uncertainty or a challenge. Is they kind of, again, I've used the phrase a couple times, but they're problem solvers. They mm-hmm. see a problem and they work for the right solution to try and get it done. And I find those are the folks, and over the course of my career anyway, that tend to progress and tend to find new roles and better roles and higher roles, because they tend to get after it and they try to find the right solution.
Were you old enough to be a Dips fan?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't. No, I I don't mind sharing. I'm 43. So I was born in 1980. So I really kind of tuned into soccer. I shared this recently with someone, but my connection to sport growing up in what was kind of rural West Virginia was actually Eurosport catalog. That was the entry point in many ways to learning about the global nature of the sport. I ordered every pair of cleats I ever had as a kid through Eurosport. It now, evolved into soccer.com, one of the leading retailers in the country, mm-hmm. the leading retailer in the country. But the connection to the sport back then, kind of late 80s, early to mid 90s, was just so different. You just didn't really have the access to the sport that you do now. I don't think people today
appreciate, was a huge gap. Right?
That's right. We used to record, we would record World Cup games on our VHS. I remember recording 94 World Cup games on our old VHS player and just watching them back because there was nothing else to watch. And now you can get, any league in the world and you have this incredible access to the sport globally. It's like second nature. But one of the things I think that fascinated us as kids growing up was kind of discovering that global nature. You sort of knew it in your mm-hmm. home. And we were fortunate to go over to England as a family late high school, early college, and went to a game at Craven Cottage and saw Fulham play. And Eddie Lewis, an old American player, was on the team at that time. And it just was this, eye-opening light bulb, just like, holy cow, this thing is so much bigger than I really understood. And so for me, that's been a really, really cool part over the course of the last 10 years, is seeing how much that kind of connectedness has happened across the world. And I love that part of the sport.
Now, with your current job, what would you say is your hardest thing to do day to day?
Good question. The hardest thing to do, I think we're fortunate because we have a lot of projects right now. In some cases, it's prioritizing what to spend time on. I think when you work for work for any company or club, you typically have somebody telling you what your to-do list is. And certainly that was the case, as you get kind of higher, I guess, over the course of your career, you're leading departments, it's less so. But even when, my last role was the SVP of marketing, had a team of probably 30 people, four or five different departments, you still have a president who's saying, hey, I need you to spend time on this, or even owner who's saying, I need you to spend time on this. Mm-hmm. In my case, now I'm kind of running my own shop. And so it's fully up to me what I spend time on every day. And so whether it's working on clients or working on new business or thinking about the agency brand and, new business development materials, you can kind of spend time on any one thing. And so I find that still something I'm figuring out how to do. I've been fortunate to bring on people who now are helping, get the work done. That prioritization piece is still challenging. You want to find the rights of doing the work that is required for your clients and over-deliver on what their expectations are. But also you need to be thinking into the future and, 8, 12, 24 months down the road and saying, how are we building the pipeline to ensure we've got work a year from now? So, that probably is how I would answer it.
Yeah. And I think your understanding of how clubs work by working in them has probably given you an advantage or some insights that not everybody has, because you can kind of see the whole process through even after you do your work for them. You can say, I've set you up, or this sets you up for X, Y, and Z, which is, that's just an experience thing. Like, how else do you get that?
I just to my earlier comment about, I don't think I could have done this at 24, 25. That's right. And you know, we've done a little bit of consulting for some expansion clubs and clubs that are just starting, you know, even when some of our work with the league is because we have an intimate knowledge, and actually all three of my full-time team members have worked for a club in MLS as well. Is you just have an understanding of what the needs are at the club level and what the sort of the cycles, right? The season and a year really is cyclical in nature. There's just different phases mm-hmm. where you have to kind of understand what's happening at what point and what is needed at one point. So yeah, just to echo what you're saying is there's a deep understanding of how a club operates and what the needs are. And so we can oftentimes answer the question before it's asked, which is certainly, it feels like a little bit of a cheat code for us.
Yeah. Now I talked about what was hard. What's on the flip side? What's easy? What's the thing that you're like, oh my gosh, I could just spend hours on this and didn't even realize that I worked on this for 3 days and I just,
yeah,
I'm in flow. Like, what is that for you personally?
Honestly, Nick, it's kind of everything. I think the job has become so much more fun as I've been able to bring on a couple people to the team. Cause the thing that I missed the most I started the agency by myself, again, knowing I would have collaborators, but now I've been able to bring a few folks onto the team. And you know, the ideation and the problem solving, the creativity process is really fun. And because the nature of an agency is having different clients and different projects and different problems to solve, is you feel like you're always kind of testing and stretching and learning. And I really enjoy that process. There's sort of nothing, for me at least, more enjoyable than having someone present you with a challenge or a problem and then coming up with a creative solution that ultimately helps them solve that problem. It's a really enjoyable process. Obviously, you don't always know what the outcome is going to be, but if the outcome is positive, it's really fun to have a positive outcome and to contribute. And I would sort of end by saying the answer by saying, ultimately, I think we're all passionate about the sport. And so continuing to contribute to the growth of the sport is really meaningful for us. I believe soccer is the best. I like other sports, but I believe soccer is the best sport in the world. I think for all the reasons I'm sure you and your listeners love it too, is it's this incredible connection to the world. It's something that crosses cultural and generational and sort of all barriers, and it's something that mm-hmm. we all can rally around, and it creates community. And so being able to continue to contribute to that growth is ultimately the thing that is really most rewarding and the most enjoyable.
Are you like you said, you get so into that process, are you a doodler? Do you have something you just keep in mind and you're like, wait, I got an idea about this, and you write it down? Are you a checklist person? What kind of flow kind of helps you?
You're asking one of my favorite questions, Nick. I ask a version of this question in every interview I conduct because I love hearing about people's process and how they stay organized. I hope Christy, my director of marketing and client service, listen to this, because Christy's I call her my second brain. She does a great job of helping me stay organized and on task. I take my laptop just about everywhere I go. I use a couple different, we use Notion. I use Evernote, and I use the to-do app on Mac to track mm-hmm. work. I'm a big kind of jot down as I go guy. So I tend to have a lot of different notes where it'll be separated by client or by project. And as I think of something, you know, I'll just sort of jot it down in a bullet point and ultimately come back to it. And then our team uses Slack like a lot of companies. So we have channels for every client and every project. And oftentimes we'll dump inspiration or ideas mm-hmm. into those channels so that others can react to them. It's kind of this ongoing continual process. We obviously schedule dedicated time for right. particular assignments or projects or clients, but there's sort of this, we want to sort of, encourage a spirit of always kind of sharing what we see out in the world that's inspiring. There's so much amazing creative stuff happening out just in world football and across soccer that we're always kind of pointing at other people's things. And I'll shout out the Charlotte FC team briefly. I just shared a photo from Taylor Banner, who's the photographer and creative there mm-hmm. at Charlotte FC. And they do such a great job, I think, with all of their video and content production and the stuff they share in their channels. Their graphic design team's really great. And we love pointing at that stuff and just taking inspiration from it. So yeah, that's a really, really fun part of the process.
Nice. Do you have something that you haven't done yet that you really want to do? I know with all this big expectations of all this soccer growth in the country coming up, is there something that you're like, I want that. I want to be able to do that.
I love question two. I'll answer it in two ways. One is from a point. One place we'd like to grow is working with brands and sponsors who are activating in the sport. So as you think about something like Ally right across the front of the shirt, is I think there's so much room for brands and sponsors to do more in the sport and to connect more in the sport and build community in the sport. And I think the next 2 years is this incredible opportunity to build credibility in soccer in advance of the World Cup. And if you wake up and it's January of 2026 and you haven't already figured out your soccer strategy, I think you're going to regret that. So we really are interested in working with brands and sponsors to help them connect to soccer fans. That's part one of the answer. And then part two is I've always really loved the U.S. men's national team. My family and I went to the 2006 World Cup in Germany and had this just incredible kind of life-changing experience in Germany. We saw the U.S. play two games. And I know folks at Kicker. I'd love to find the right opportunity to collaborate with U.S. soccer and in particular the U.S. men's national team. I love the women's national team as well because it's been such an important part of kind of my family's connection to the sport. Obviously, the World Cup itself is such a significant and amazing thing. And right. Even though people know how big it's going to be, I think they still underestimate its impact. I mean, it's going to be the biggest sporting event in human history. Right. And it's just going to take North America and the U.S. by storm. So I'd love to find a way
so many levels.
U.S. soccer and at every level, I think that's exactly right, Nick. Yeah, to answer, I think I'd love to find a way to work with U.S. soccer at some point in the future, whether that's around the World Cup or some point in the future. We'd love to partner with them at some point. So hopefully one of them have stuck around long enough to listen and will give us a buzz.
Right. But what is something you wish people would ask you in an interview that you never get asked?
is it a good question? Your last couple have been, you've got a lot of good. I don't know that I have a good answer to that question, Nick. Put me on the spot. Let me think on that. I don't know if you have any others, but I'll think on that one.
Yeah.
It's stoppage time.
All right. Do you have a must-do personal ritual?
A must-do personal ritual?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you said quick fire. I got to think on my feet here. A must-do personal ritual. I don't think I do. The things that come to mind are all family. I've got two boys. I've got two boys. They're 7 and 4. We read together every night. And we like to get out and play soccer. So I'll keep the answer short. It's family Perfect. Related.
All right. Favorite unplugged activity.
Yeah, I hope these aren't all family answers necessarily, but it's with my boys. I got a 7-year-old and 4-year-old. They both love the sport, and I love getting out and kicking the ball with them.
Nice. The go-to snack for when you're watching a match?
Go-to snack when I'm watching a match. Oh, man. I don't know if I have a good answer here either. You're watching in the morning if it's Premier League or Bundesliga. I'm usually having a cup of English breakfast tea and a piece of toast. That's not a very interesting answer.
All right, that's fine. You might like this one. What design impresses you more, interior or exterior?
Interior, exterior. Probably exterior. I don't know that I have a great reason for it. I think design of any type is interesting, right? If you're someone mm-hmm. who has that gift and can create something that is pleasing to the eye, I think it's really impressive. But yeah, I guess I'd say exterior.
Okay. And design doesn't necessarily have to be visual either, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
The exterior could be just what it appears to be, kind of like your strategic marketing. For Seattle, that's an exterior thing, although there's a lot of interior that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Do you find starting a project or finishing one more gratifying?
I really enjoy the start of a project. And I think I might have answered it differently, 10, 15 years ago, but I think it's the start piece. You're hopefully putting people on your team in a position to be successful and go execute. And as I've got later in my career, I've really enjoyed the process of working with people who are more creative than I am and more talented than I am, but helping provide them with the right framework to go do it. So the start of a project for that reason is really fun. Although, shipping off an end product is a really fun thing to do as well.
Right. What recharges you?
Yeah, time with family recharges me. I'd say time outdoors. You know, we live in West Virginia now, and so there's a ton of amazing places to go. Mountains are here, woods are here. It's a beautiful state. So time with family, and then and with the kids and my wife, and then yeah, just being outdoors, getting some sunshine.
All right, last of the stoppage time questions. What position would you most like to play if you were on the pitch in today's MLS?
I played a little bit of center mid, a little bit outside mid, and then I spent 1 year playing up top. I really enjoyed playing up top, not because my defensive work rate was poor, Nick, but there is something to be said for just kind of hanging out up top and getting to try to bang in goals. I'd liken myself to like an old school Marco Echeverri late in his career, Carlos Valderrama, just kind of stayed right in the center circle and just pinged balls kind of left and right. That's like an MLS throwback for the old heads. But yeah, at the moment, one that didn't require me to run very much.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks, Kyle. We really appreciate you being on and sharing a little bit about what Name and Number does and what Pathway does. If you want to do a last little shout out to how people can get in touch with you, where they can follow, things that they can kind of keep their eye on to know that it's your work doing
this.
Yeah,
thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. Yeah, you can find me on I'm primarily on Twitter and LinkedIn, just at Kyle Sheldon, first name and last name. And then Name and Number is Name and Number spelled out, no ampersand, on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. And then Pathway is Pathway_HQ. So we're across all the channels. Feel free to connect, shoot me a DM or an email or a message, and hopefully I can find some time to get back to everybody.
Sounds good. Thanks.
I appreciate Kyle joining the show today. One of my favorite things about this episode was how Kyle talked about the people who work for him and how much trust he has in them to do the amazing work that they do. Remember Name and Number and Pathway. I'm positive you'll be seeing and hearing and experiencing their footprint on football in the United States for the years to come. Maybe one of you out there will work with them one day too. As always, thank you again for listening to the Charlotte FC podcast, and don't forget to follow or subscribe to our podcast and follow us on X, Instagram, and YouTube at CLTFC Podcast. Enjoy your day.